Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. I'd like to welcome David G. Ewing. He's actually a CEO of two companies, of Motif and Content Lion. And happy to have you here on the show today, David.
Hey, thanks, Dean. Good to be here.
And maybe you could kick it off, just give a little bit of a background. Like I read your background, which is like an awesome entrepreneurial journey, and really appreciated that. But maybe you could talk a little bit about your two companies and a little bit about yourself to give context to our conversation.
Yeah, sure. Per that bio, I have, at a wee young age, was subjected to my parents both being entrepreneurs. And so I guess that I got it from them. But fast forward, I started Motif when I was 24. And the idea behind Motif was I'd been a strategy consultant, and I didn't find that to be very fulfilling. I think strategy consulting is important. Good advice is important, but it doesn't make the meter move. So when I created Motif, it was right at the time the cloud emerged. And the idea was, can we build a company that is one part strategy, one part execution? And I think Motif has been extremely successful in helping high growth companies evolve their customer experience and build lifetime value from their customer base. So that's one company. I also have a second company, Content Lion, which is now just 2 years old. And Content Lion's job is to protect, preserve, and share everyone's content so that the right people have access to the right content at the right time, whether that be sensitive HR documents, product literature, marketing materials, sales presentations. Lots of the stuff has varying degrees of need to be shared across so many different platforms, and Content Lion delivers that as well. Yeah. I'm also a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization. I'm a big fan of EO, and any entrepreneur who is looking to get out of their own head and solve their business problems can really benefit from that. And I'm no exception. And I was the president of the EO chapter for Austin last year.
Amazing. Amazing. Austin's an amazing town, lots of entrepreneurs. And prior to us coming on the podcast, we were talking about you were the president of the entrepreneurial organization in Austin. And you want to talk a little about some of the things that like you learned there and share with our audience?
Oh, sure. Yeah. The idea behind EO, which is a global organization, and I just ran the Austin chapter, is that it's there to unlock the potential of every entrepreneur. And what does that mean? For some people, they have a lot of hangups from their childhood, and they make crazy decisions as adults because of things that happen. Who do you talk to when you're the CEO about clearing that? And it's not your executive team, right? Entrepreneurs Organization helps you with your personal issues and makes you a better leader. It helps you with your family issues, right? Because being married to an entrepreneur is a roller coaster unto itself. And so when family dynamics affect the entrepreneur, the business suffers. And so there's that. And then of course, there's just plain old running your company better. When I was president of EO for the year, we had a theme, which was adventure. And we did the four things that you do in every adventure. You plan the adventure, and we had lots of speakers about how to plan to maximize your business. And we had great people like Zane Terrence, the guy who wrote 17 Reasons Why Your Company's Not Investor Grade and What to Do About It. You also, on your adventure, have to lead the adventure. So we had leadership. And so we had Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, come talk to us about leadership. You also have to inspire people on the adventure. And so we had futurists like, why his name's escaping me right now, and he's going to kill me because he's a local Austin guy. But we had futurists come in and talk to us about what's going in the future and what can we think about AI. And then, of course, you have to inspire people, and then you have to improvise on the adventure. And so we had some Stanford improvisational leadership people come in and talk about how you can use improv as a leader to make things happen when opportunities arise. And those were the kinds of things that we did during the year. And it was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds super interesting. And yeah, I belong to Vistage, which is a kind of similar organization. And you just like these continued learning and peer collaboration. And
Yeah, those are amazing. And then you recently talked to me about Jeff Woods or around AI leadership, or can you share some things around that? Or
yeah, so Jeff is another Austin-based guy, but one thing we did at Entrepreneurs Organization is we have a regional conference. So everybody from Detroit and Minnesota and Wisconsin and all the way down to Texas, including Houston and Austin and Dallas, we all get together once a year. And we had Jeff Woods come in and talk to us about using AI as a thought leadership partner. And so it's a completely different way to use AI if you're used to just banging away with the GPT and asking questions and getting responses back. And boy, you could hear a pin drop during that talk because Jeff has a lot of things to say about how to leverage the AI model and how with just some simple techniques in your prompting, you as an entrepreneurial leader can use AI to turn it into a thought partner. So that the most strategic, most sensitive issues that you have in the company, the things that you're really working on, you can use AI like a sounding board and get far more value out of it than anything I ever thought you could do. So it's not just for writing press releases.
So did you, he talking about like deep research or where you are doing some competitive strategy or value proposition or do you remember any use cases? Like how do you do that? And maybe you could share that.
I'll tell you one thing. He's got a book and it goes through everything that I couldn't summarize in 30 seconds. But if I could summarize everything into 30 seconds, this is what I would say is that you can use prompting where you actually tell ChatGPT to ask you questions. And let me give you an example. Recently, I had a problem in my company that it was an HR issue, right? A thorny HR issue. And so I'll skip the details, but just say that I put the context of the problem in, right? And then what I did is I asked it to be my HR expert because these GPTs are trained on so many things that they've got so much detail in so many different books. And so I then said, hey, I want you to ask me up to 5 questions about this situation and ask them one at a time. And after I've answered the 5, I need the best strategy for how to resolve this issue that I gave all the context in. And what's really neat is when you do that, it works. It'll come back and it'll start to ask questions so that you can come up with unconventional, out of the box ways to solve your problem. And that little trick right there is phenomenal because now you can use AI to really start challenging your thinking. And so it's not just regurgitating or optimizing content based on what you just provided it, but you're now using some more of its advanced modeling features to go places where you hadn't been able to go yourself. And that's when it becomes a thought partner. And as an AI-driven leader, that was really powerful for me.
Yeah, that's some good advice. And I think what's really important is what you said. You give it context. If you want to work on a certain way of frameworks or Myers-Briggs or whatever, you give it some context of frameworks or business process, and then you ask you questions and you answer, and then it can evaluate you. That's an awesome example. And then how did you guys use AI in your business?
Between the two companies, we use a lot of different techniques for AI. So let's just put on to the side the thought leadership piece I just talked about. That's great. But we've built a lot of tools to extend other software applications with AI. So for example, there are many techniques for email campaigns, right? And so we built at Motive a plugin for email software like Eloqua from Oracle. And using like just a point and click interface, you can pick from among the 20 different best practice ways to generate email campaigns, fill in a few blanks. And essentially what you're doing is you're filling in some of the best prompting that we've been able to create in the world. And then it will generate all of the emails that you need for your campaign. So you can just string them together now and launch the campaign. Just trying to get through some of that underlying time-saving things has been really big. And so we built applications that do that. At Content Lion, we're going in a completely different direction, which is Content Lion is about centralizing all of your content, your knowledge, all that literature that I just mentioned, product, service, and support. And what we're doing there is we're saying, you've already got all this great stuff. So how can we use AI to take it to the next level? So it could be as simple as I'm getting ready to write a blog article. Can you mine the data I already have so that I don't even have to give you the context, right? The context is already here. It's in Content Lion. These are all my products. This is all my literature. This is my service stuff. Write these tips for me. And then give me an AI generated video that goes with it or an image clip so that when I publish my blog article, everything is consistent and synced together, but I'm saving the most important thing of all, which is time. And so that's a big one. And then we're moving advanced from there so that if people want to just start to borrow ideas from the best things on the web, like, for example, if you have a website, you're not happy with it, and you're like, God, I really like this other guy's site. How can we use AI to generate a site for you that's going to be filled with your content, but look like the site you always wished it could? Those are the kinds of things that we're exploring and expanding on right now. And so that's where AI is getting exciting. And as it gets more powerful, you really have to keep your imagination running way ahead of the technology. But translation is another place where we use it. How can we build content in Content Lion, build it in English? And then if it needs to be in French, Canadian, and Spanish, if you're a North American company, or in all the Benelux countries, if you're over there, how do we just press a button and have it translated into all the different things we need so that when people consume our content, whether it be on the web or mobile or anywhere else, it's in the language they can use and we can trust the translation. So those are the kinds of things too.
So is Content Lion a software company and service company, or is it a service company building software to help?
Content Lion is a complete digital experience management software platform.
Okay, so you're building software. It's a software.
Oh, company. Content Lion is a software company. Yeah. So Businesses use Content Lion to centralize their content and share it wherever they need to. Motive, however, is my service company. So sorry for the confusion, but yeah, Motive is the service company. Yeah. It does all these service things.
Yeah.
Content Lion is the software company and it builds the centralized software. So.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, what you said is so valuable with all the content and then to output new websites, content, video, but you're automating that. Is Content Lion the name of your software, Content Lion?
Yep.
Okay, good. Yep. That makes it easy.
Yeah, and content is king, the lion's king of the jungle, so Content Lion works on so many levels.
I love it. Apex predator.
Exactly. Yeah, there we go.
Now, you've been an entrepreneur for a long time and sounds like you've been around a lot of entrepreneurs and your whole life. Like, what kind of advice could you share? What are some good lessons that you've learned that you could share with our audience?
For entrepreneurs out there, I'd say let's take it down to just a couple of things, maybe three. Number one is I wish that someone had given me the advice a long time ago to enjoy the journey more than I did. And it wasn't until my sister started her company. And of course she leapfrogged me and now she's the hero of the world. She runs Literati.
That's not right.
Yeah, I know.
Better do something about that, David.
I know your kid's sister just leaves you in the dust. So anyway,
those are tough holidays.
Yeah, no. But what she said to her co-founder when they got started is 5 years from now, if we're lying in a ditch because this didn't work out, I'm going to be pretty happy because we took a shot, because we did this thing. And that's just such a great mindset of, look, we're not all going to make it. That's just how it goes. But can you enjoy the journey and can you accept that even if you're lying in a ditch in 5 years, which none of us are really doing that, but if you are, can you enjoy the journey? Because it is about the journey, not the destination. If you're just waiting for the magic payday comes and then the next day you're back to square zero. If you were just waiting for that one day to be the Shangri-La and you think your life's going to be happy at that point, I got news for you. It's not. Like it's right now. You need to be happy today, no matter how crazy it is, no matter what HR issues you have, no matter what legal problems you have, no matter what happened to the product. Enjoy it. Enjoy the journey. So that would be the first thing that I would do. The second thing is I would say a key to enjoying the journey is you've got to have someone to come with you. And the people that come with you are not always your family and your executive team. Like they're signed up for the ride and it's a white knuckle adventure for them, but they're going to have a lot harder time enjoying the ups and downs that you're going through because they just don't have the control that you have. Go find yourself some other entrepreneurs. And whether you mentioned Visage or whether it's Entrepreneurs Organization or something else, go buddy up with those guys because that is the crew that you need to get through all of the craziness that's happening and really get out of your own way. And then, you know, the third thing that I would say for entrepreneurs is that you really got to find what I call the atomic unit in your business. And I think every business has a different atomic unit. I think the best example is in Starbucks, what's the atomic unit? It's not actually a cup of coffee, it's the store. And that's what they really realized is that the experience of going to the store, why do we love going to Starbucks? We get to hang out, pull out our laptop, there's nice, cool music, there's comfortable seats, normally, not always. And then the coffee's okay. It's that whole experience that makes Starbucks, right? What I had to learn about my business is I was always looking for what's my atomic units at, for example, at Motive. And I thought it was the project, right? And I spent years optimizing how do we deliver a great project to our customers and all the different steps. And that turned out to be really important. But it turned out that my atomic unit was my consultants. And when I made my consultants the best they could be, then a lot of things took care of themselves. And as a CEO, you're always sitting there trying to think, where do I spend my time? What's the thing that I can do that nobody else can do? And to me, it's impact the atomic unit. Like that one thing that if you build it 1,000 times, the company just grows more than 1,000 times. And to me, it was, I need to be involved in our learning management system and our training, because if I can make the consultants better at scale, then I can really move the needle on this company. And that turned out to be correct. And so I think that it's not always intuitive what the atomic unit of your business is, but attack the atomic unit would be my third piece of advice.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's hard. I think it's probably hard to come up with the atomic unit, and people will say, oh, that's your competitive advantage. But boy, competitive advantages come and go. And how do you have sustainability? Did you come up with how do you discover your atomic unit? Do you have any advice around that?
No.
How do you even know that you found the right atomic unit?
Where I started that journey was, I read, and I want to give credit where credit's due, but I can't remember what I read that did it. But somebody had the idea that you want to look at profit per X, where X is this atomic unit. So the example I remember, and I wish I could attribute it, was if you're in airlines, is it profit per flight? Is that really the thing? And what's really interesting is I ask a lot of businesses when we're doing discovery at Motive, and we're like, you know, what's that core atomic unit, like profit per X, that you need to run and scale your business? And a lot of people scratch their head and they're like, I'm not exactly sure. And it's not an easy question to answer. But I think that when you figure it out, suddenly a lot of things become clear, because affecting profit per X, if you have that right atomic unit, drives the company in ways that are amazing, right? And if you've got the wrong one, you'll do some of this stuff and it won't affect the business. And then, hey, you just got to try again. You got to go try and find what is that atomic unit that makes the company really go gangbusters. So
yeah, that's a difficult one, because
it is.
Because competition, economic, market changes. And so even if I'm not sure, you say profit and X, that could be an economic model. And it could be working, like, oh, you get to a certain scale, it works. But also as an entrepreneurial journey, you don't always get to scale because you're driving towards that, which is different. I'm trying to understand atomic unit, which is different. Like if it's the value and competitive advantage that you're doing that will get to you to have that X profitability. But I don't know. I'm just talking out loud. How do you think about that?
I look at it like this. If you, no matter how big your company is, whether you're a $1 billion company or you're two guys in a garage, you're delivering something, right? You're delivering either a product or service or a combination thereof. That's your solution. And to me, the atomic unit is that thing that you can't, if you break it down any further, it's no longer like a viable offering to a customer, okay, right? So just like an atom, right? An atom is, you can break it up, but it's no longer a piece of matter, at least according to scientists. In a business, it's like when you're two guys in a garage and you can do just one thing very well, and you're like, if we can only do this 1,000,000 times, we're going to be off to the races. Then you found your atomic unit. If you're a big publicly traded multi-billion-dollar company, you still have, you probably have a molecule at that point, right? If I'm going to keep the analogy going, but you still have this delivery in your business units of what is the thing that if we can just multiply this by 10, we get an outsized set of advantages. And if we make an improvement, it goes across the entire company. So to me, I'm always looking at that. So again, for an airline, it might be the flight is the thing. And if we just do 100,000 flights, we're great. If it's coffee, it's actually the store experience, not the individual cup of coffee. That this is where the nuance comes in. If you're Motive, it's not per project that actually is where it's not profit per project, but it's profit per consultant that actually turns out to be our atomic unit. Because when we optimize and make those consultants incredible, that becomes the thing that actually drives the business forward. And yes, finding your atomic unit is an interesting quest for any business entrepreneur or large scale manager who's trying to take the company to the next level. I think it's always an important analysis to go conduct.
And do you think it will always be the same atomic unit, or do you think it could change over time?
Oh, it's definitely going to change over time. And I think that's where businesses get comfortable. This is why I think companies collapse, is because they're used to how things work and they've got that sort of mental model for what it is, and it shifts underneath them. And when it does and you can't reframe, then you're in trouble. And that happens at the individual level too, right? We're seeing that with AI, where I just, before I got on this call with you, Dean, was talking to my development team. And the thing that I needed to tell them was, hey, you guys are wonderful, talented coders, And that's great. But these AI tools can write code thousands of times faster than you. And that does not make you useless. You are, in fact, far more useful now because each of you just got a promotion. You are no longer a coder. You are the leader of essentially an infinite team of coders. And what you really need to be thinking about is, now that you have this promotion, what are you going to do with it? Like, how are you going to lead simply the AI to get what we need? Because we've always needed to build a box, right? We've always needed to have some kind of code in a box that we deliver and it makes a solution happen. But it's, what is the problem that we're trying to solve with that box? AI is not going to figure that out. That's you guys. And we're just going to be able to build boxes a whole hell of a lot faster now that we have that. I think that's been a tough message for people to really grasp. But I think what snapped it together for them is I said, guys, it's not that you're competing against the AI. It's that you and the AI and me, we're all competing against other firms who can develop code. And if we can't develop faster, better, stronger, more reliable, more secure, and more innovative, then we're going to lose. And that's the game that we're playing. And it's, I think, was a big shift for them.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we're a company that has a lot of tools for developers and AI, and we build a lot that we sell to professional developers. And there's always a resistance to change, but there's also hype. So like AI coding, vibe coding, or just like a professional developers probably won't vibe code, but it can't understand full contexts of architecture and all these systems, but amazingly helpful at very specific things. And then you still have to check it, make sure it's right, because these LLMs, no matter what, will make something up, and which may or may not be right. And so it's like, people, like even recently, what Nadella was on at with a Meta conference is, oh, we have 30% of our code now written by AI. But I think if you like pull back the data on that, it won't be like, oh, 30% of our new innovative architectural code was written by AI. It's, it's like, oh, unit test. It's a little small problem solution. It's like grounding in where we're at with the hype, but actual also amazing innovation. And yeah, I agree. Like, we have a lot of developers and we want them all to use AI, and that most of them do, but there's just resistance to change, or yeah, it's just not going to be magical and do everything for you. No, it's just an assistant. And
yeah. It's a new set of tools. And so we just have to start to get used to using them. That's all.
Yeah, no doubt. And how are you? So have you seen improvements in productivity with AI? Are you at the beginning of that journey, or do you have any things to share there with your dev team?
In terms of things I can quantify, no, I don't think I can quantify it, because I don't think we, to your point, I don't ever track lines of code per employee because I believe in the quality of code, not the quantity 100%. Of code. Yeah. But what I have seen is that we are more productive. We are turning things faster than we have in the past. To me, it's really a speed thing. So if there's an internal project that I would estimate that took 8 weeks before, I'm now guessing it's probably closer to 5 and maybe 6. Is it cutting things in half? Almost. I think that it's actually that big of an impact that we're just not doing a lot of that stuff. But it's not taking it from 8 weeks to 1 week or 8 weeks to 0 weeks, because again, trying to figure out what belongs in the box, what's the problem, and to your point, what's the architecture that makes sense? You know, what's some of the more critical, bigger picture thinking that even with a lot of context and AI solutions, still not going to be able to generate or grasp, it's still there. And will that improve? I think so. But will it ever go to zero? Definitely not.
Yeah. And did you take the time? Did your team take the time to train the AI on your code base and architecture? Did you guys do that effort or?
I have to answer that two different ways for two different companies. For Motive, where a lot of times our software is really extending another Oracle product, the answer is no, because we'd certainly trained it on the APIs and some of the underlying applications, but not on our architecture or training it on any of that. At ContentLine, yes, you know, that obviously there with it being a software company, we did do that. And so all of our software follows standards and procedures and architecture conventions and other things that we use at ContentLine.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And sometimes it's even hard to do that because everyone's running to deliver backlog, and that could be a whole month research project to get it right. And then does it really work? And then where are the gotchas? And like, there's still a lot of hard work in there, making sure the guardrails are there, that things are being outputted correctly, but worth the investment.
Yes, I would say so. But ContentLine, the journey's been, it's been 2 years of having the company. We really began only coding about 8 months ago. So the first part was a lot of strategy and investor pitching and research and product definition. But so we, I think, are a software company born in the AI age, because that was how we started generating code from day one. And the amount of code that we've been able to generate in that period of time to go into our general availability in January and then rapidly build from our 1.0 release to something that is now achieving a SOC 2 compliance and is really off to the races. It's been amazing at how fast that process occurred.
Yeah. And most recently, like maybe 6 months ago, if you didn't already, you have to sign as a software CEO company that you can be a felon if your team is not practicing secure coding practices, which is insane. I don't know if you've had to do that yet or sign that.
I have not had to sign that yet, but but yeah, I mean, there are a bunch of these things where, yeah, if you're the CEO of a publicly traded company and the information's not right, you're a felon under. And so it's part of
Even
the world we live
companies.
In. Yeah.
I actually had to sign that. And yeah. You may not want to leave that to the AI.
So maybe we need to talk to you about what are the things we want to check on before we sign that piece of paper.
Yeah,
so.
It's like this incredible, it's a hard document to like adhere to. And I just thought I'd bring it up out of more humor than anything. But so what about when you look at like product market fit? So you're probably, do you think the AI can help you with product market fit? Do you have any thoughts around that?
That is a great question. I do a lot of things with product market fit, but I have not done anything with AI there. So I'm going to just admit right there, that's a blank one for me. But I think that product market fit is clearly a great use case.
Yeah, I'm sure Motif, you guys worry all the time about ICP, ideal customer profile, and segmenting and messaging and marketing, and which AI helps with all that. But like we all know how hard it is to find product market fit, and it's always a journey to get there. And then you get it and you can have more than one product market fit, and then some can go away, and then you have to find new, and it's like a never ending task. And I think AI can help, but like it would be amazing if someone purposely built the tool like around experimentation to help find product market fit. I know we would use it.
Yeah, it's a great suggestion, Dean. And to me, I think that just my intuition says that if you think about the underlying low-level stuff in product market fit, like how to generate a really great ICP questionnaire or lead a session with early adopter customers or other things, I think AI is going to do a great job. But can it see the big picture and can it innovate? And I think the question I've been asking myself, is there a point where AI is going to have volition? Because until it has volition, I don't see it. It's a model that is responding to input, adapting and responding to stimuli, but it doesn't by itself want anything. And until you want something, I really think that to me is the fundamental thing that drives innovation, is the desire to want something new or to want to create something new. And volition is that thing. Is that going to be an AI? That's a big question for me.
Sorry to be so ignorant. What do you mean by volition? That it has a desire of some outcome? Like, what do you mean volition?
Yeah. So you know, Kurt Vonnegut had some really great writing advice once, and he said, every character should want something, even if it's just a glass of water. And I've always thought about that and said, to me, that's volition, is that you inherently just want something. You want something, Dean. I want something. Everyone listening to this, we probably have 1,000 wants a day. AI has zero. It doesn't want anything. It's just sitting there. And it'll respond to anything we need, and our wants become its wants. But until it has wants of its own, I just don't see it being like I don't see it truly innovating, because I think it is the desire for something that really is what is at the fundamental, most like groundbreaking level of innovation. And that to me is missing. And I'm curious to know if there's a way to either simulate it or bring in the idea of volition, of wanting something into AI.
Don't you think maybe setting a goal that would like fake the AI into mysteriously having volition?
It'll do that on a feedback loop, right? And that's one of the three major ways to train an AI model, is reward it with every time it moves something. Yeah. So you can set up volition there, but that's an iterative cycle. And in product market fit, you just don't get that many at bats. It would be curious, and to your point, if somebody could come up with a way to make that work, and then I think I'd be all ears.
Yeah. It would need to do a lot of experiments, collect data, and to find that repeatable process. But I think it's a collaborator in that journey. And yeah, there's just, I don't know. I don't know if we'd be able to do that, but I would buy it too if someone had it.
So entrepreneurs out there listening, there you go.
Yeah. Is there any questions that you wish I would have asked here in this interview that I didn't?
I don't know how much you've explored this topic. I think there is the underlying fear that goes with AI, right? Everybody is afraid, of course, the AI super monster. They're afraid of AI displacing their job. They're afraid of unforeseen impacts of AI. They're afraid of how AI is going to just impact their ability to do the thing that they find unique about themselves, right? It can even create an identity crisis. And I think that fear is something where, as leaders, we need to help everybody get over that fear, right? Because there is something that makes us truly human. But I think what we're realizing with AI is that it's not necessarily our cognitive ability, right? There's AI tools will, in the not too distant future, be far more intelligent than you or me or anybody else. When that happens, we still have to consider what is it that makes us human? And that's a terrifying thought. And so as AI starts to mimic some of those things and strips that away, it's a philosophical question that we have to answer. And so I think as leaders, we're all telling our teams the same thing, right? Which is, hey, you're not competing against AI, you're competing against other teams, and your willingness to use AI allows you to compete against those teams. But what else is out there, and what is everybody thinking about that they're not maybe saying, and what are their concerns? I think it's something that we have to make sure that everybody understands that we're aware of those problems and that we're seeing them and we're going to try and work through this together. But,
yeah, no doubt.
But I fundamentally believe, go ahead.
My last
thought on this is, if we, one atomic unit is worker productivity, right? And some people are looking at AI and they're like, great, I can eliminate a bunch of workers. And to some extent, there's going to be some of that, right? Some people's jobs will be displaced by AI. But fundamentally, going back to the volition comment, if you can be someone who adopts and uses AI, if your productivity goes up, I fundamentally believe that wages and standard of living go up with it. And that's just something that is going to be part of this revolution that we're just on the first step of a long staircase to get towards, which is a world where pretty much every single person is using AI in some form or capacity to do the things that they're already doing today.
Yeah, no doubt. AI is just a collaboration tool to elevate your game. And if you choose not to use it, then you're not going to be able to compete against people that are using it to elevate their game, as I think was one of your points. And was Ray Kurz the person you were trying to think of that lived in Austin as a futurist?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Ray. And if I look back on the bookshelf, I'll figure it out. But it's a boy, he's going to be mad.
Okay, because I just wanted to say, like, Ray Kurzweil says in 3 years, there won't be software developers, which is just not true. And like everyone that knows, so I worry about people don't continue to study STEM, study engineering, study computer science, but everyone needs to keep doing that because like critical thinking, synthesizing tools, technology, problems, like still humans are going to be just collaborating with AI to come up with that. So I don't like some of the predictions out there are pretty big. And I think they make that because they want $100 billion or $1 trillion of funding. But with that amazing innovation, but yeah, it's a collaborator for all of us. And believe me, software developers are not dead. We need more of them. And in 5 or 10 years, yeah, just a whole nother level of productivity, but collaborating and with it. I just wanted to share my 2 cents too in here. Not that you asked for that, David, but
no.
Yeah.
All right. To get myself out of trouble, I just remembered the name. It's Byron Reese. Byron Reese is the thinker. He's an incredible guy. If you haven't read a book by Byron Reese, go get one at random. Byron is incredible. But whether it's The Fourth Age, which is one of his books on smarter robots and conscious computers and the future of humanity, that's one of my favorite ones. But Byron, just to net it out for the audience, this is not a doom and gloom guy. This guy thinks that actually the world is going to become awesome. And he makes a really compelling case for why that's going to happen. And if you're looking for anything inspirational in this otherwise terrifying age, I would say go read as much Byron Reese as you possibly can, because Byron is absolutely spectacular. And I think, and correct, by the way, I think he is correct. And so despite a short-term upheaval, the underlying dynamics of all the things that are happening and continue to happen will be great. Yeah, so not Ray Kurzweil, but Byron Reese, fantastic guy.
I'm going to have to look him up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Awesome. David, let me get it right. David G. Ewing, it's been a pleasure, really pleasure chatting with you. And I love your journey and your story and history. I just love it. I love entrepreneurs. We're a unique breed, and I totally align with enjoy the journey, because otherwise, yeah, there is no end. It never ends. And plus, when you're an entrepreneur, you don't want to sit around not solving problems after you become, whether if financial is a goal, it's like, it won't make you happy, I think was another one of your points. So 100% yeah. There. And so if people want to get in touch with you, learn more about you and your, or your companies, how should I do that?
Yeah. So I have a thought leadership website at davidgewing.com. And that's where I go and write about behind the scenes, what my journey is like and what's happening and my thoughts on running both Content Lion and Motive. You can read, if you're into customer experience and want to just make a great one for your company, motivecx.com. And if you're someone who wants to centralize their content so they can share it with the world through all their different channels, then it's contentlion.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, David. I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Dean. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.